Yes, they're in between.
Yeah, that's what I heard. All right, we are back on the record with initiative 2015-2016, number 73, public accountability of officers. The proponents could introduce yourselves.
Mike Spaulding.
David Ontke.
Okay. And we've been through this one a number of times, so why don't you tell us what you changed, and then tell us what you think the single subject is.
Okay, well, sadly, we're unable to cover all branches of government, and so after much trying. So right now, there's no judicial component in here anywhere, and it just applies to legislative and executive. And everything else is essentially the same. Actually, there are no substantive changes other than removing all the judicial references. And the single subject is public accountability or of officials. So it's just, it uses recall to enhance accountability of officials.
Okay. Any questions? Opponents? No. Is there anybody here who wishes to speak on the single subject of this proposed initiative? All right. Any discussion?
Sure. I'll start on this one. And we've been citing the Supreme Court's opinion on proposed initiative 2013-14, number 76, for quite a while, and I think much to the proponent's chagrin. However, this time, looking at this, we now no longer have this applying to either non-elective officials or to the judicial branch of government. And I know that in one of the prior iterations, I think it was 36, there was a motion for a rehearing where some arguments were made that even without those things, we still might not have a single subject. But there is on page 15 of the 76 opinion, the statement that lists basically all of these things that apply just to recall. And says, collectively, these changes in the manner in which recall elections are conducted constitute a single subject. So based on that, I think we have a single subject this time.
I agree.
Is that a motion? Or
I can make it a motion. I just want to give you guys a chance to get some thoughts. So I would move that we find a single subject for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 73.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, let's turn to the staff draft. Do you have any comments on the draft?
Mostly, I'm really pleased. It was very well done. The shortest staff draft we've seen. It seems to cover all the issues. So thanks to the staff. But there are a couple little
All you need to do is shorten
things.
Your
initiative. Maybe that was it. Yeah. But they've seen it enough times, so they know what gets knocked out and what stays. There's just a couple small items, if you're ready.
Go ahead.
Okay. The last line, 10 or 5, it says limiting of donations to recall campaigns. I mean, do we need the of? It's just limiting donations.
Right.
So that's a small thing. And then line 8. Toward the end there, it says eligibility for elected office for recalled officers. I'm thinking that should be an of, too, instead of a for there.
Okay. Specifying recall and successor election procedure.
Is eligibility of.
I don't know.
I kind of like the four, but I don't think it makes much difference.
And I'm not married to it. It's just a little thing I saw. So either way is fine. But it just seemed clear.
I'm fine either way. Do you have any others? We'll just take your comments up while we do our own.
Okay. A bit of a larger change, just right after that of, it says recalled officers and for the recall of officers who defeat a recall effort. It just for compactness or clarity, actually, if we got rid of recalled officers and for the recall of, and just change that to officers who do or do not defeat a recall effort, that would, I think, be easier for somebody to understand that. Back a little more there.
I will comment on that. I think the difficulty with that and with this language, which is a little tricky to follow, is trying to capture is that I don't think with the officers who've defeated a recall that you're defining their eligibility for office. What you're defining is their eligibility to, for someone to try to recall them again, if I understand the initiative correctly.
That's true. That's true. It actually affects, okay, yeah, I understand your point. It does affect whether or not they can be recalled again if they defeat it, so.
Okay. All right. You have other, why don't we do some board discussion on the question?
I do just have one preliminary one, and that's the question is, I think everything here applies, and I know that the proponent said that accountability was their preferred single subject, but I think everything in here now applies just to recall. And I know we've had arguments in some of the past hearings about accountability itself sort of being an umbrella type of title, and I wonder if just saying concerning recall of public officers is a bit narrower and more descriptive.
Yeah, I think it is at this point.
I would agree.
Yeah.
When you say that, is it helpful or hurtful to put elected in front of public officials? We talk about it. I mean, it's discussed later on where it's state and local elective.
Could say officers. Elected officials.
Right.
Instead of public officers.
That might be some legacy.
Yeah.
Text there.
Right. Yeah.
I think we are public officers, but we're not elected.
Right.
Right.
Which he had in one.
It's the recall that attaches
years
to
ago.
The election, right?
Right. Yeah.
Originally, you could be recalled. But.
Right. I know. I think it's
too bad.
I think it's maybe legacy issues. So
we
I'm wondering
such
whether
a
not...
positive impression on you that you chose.
Yeah, I said no, no.
I'm not sure that's it.
All right.
I asked the question without feeling all that strongly about it one way or the other, but I think it's probably helpful.
Is there a way to word that last section a little bit?
Yeah.
Just kind of the part about limiting donations to recall campaigns and payments to recall circulators.
It almost says you're paying to recall a person who's a petition circulator. And you know what? That's part of the campaign. Maybe... just ended at recall campaigns because payments to recall
like
circulators is part of a recall.
Some
campaign.
Of that applies to circulators, right? And some of it
yeah.
applies to campaign donations.
I think it applies to both.
I will say the change we made on two just to match. The language of the initial blow probably we should say elective instead of elected.
Okay, elective, sure. Yeah, some of them might not have been elected.
Oh, yeah.
They could have been appointed.
Right.
And it matches the language.
I agree.
Yeah, which is there later on. At number four, I noticed that we're saying, let's see, I can sit here. Or line four, officers defeat a recall effort, prohibiting identification reporting or limiting. It's almost like it should be identifying, just so they're all ing in a row there.
What are you doing there? I mean, what is actually happening?
Oh, actually, it's line five now.
I mean, as a practical matter, just explain to me how that is working.
They're not required to report everybody who donated to the recall campaign or the paid circulators or those parts. So that would be the identifying part. And then
you're
the
not
other...
required to report it, but you're not actually prohibiting it. Like if they wanted to say, hey, look, we have a grassroots campaign and we have 50,000 donors
really...
of $10.
Yeah.
Right?
Because we're so cool. Okay, yeah. So maybe it's really prohibiting the requirement of.
Right. I mean.
Even though that makes it longer, you're right. That is more accurate.
Yeah. I just think that what you do with campaigns and what you do with circulators is very different. I mean, campaign fund, this is mixing in campaign funds and circulators. I think it'd be better to say, you know, talk about the reporting and limiting of donations to recall campaigns, and then talk about the identification and payments to recall circulators. You working on that or something?
Sorry, I'm working on a different part.
It is a little confusing the way it is right now. So, do we need to have petition circulators in there at all, or is that just part of the whole recall campaign?
Yeah, I'm not really too concerned about the circulators, to be honest, but. Some people maybe, I don't know.
Okay.
Certainly gets a lot of litigation, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Exempting campaign finance limits and reporting requirements from recall elections? Is that what you're doing?
I mean, that is part of it, but it's not really what we talk about in the text. We have a list of, harassment methods that have been used in the past that we don't want to see going forward. And, you know, it's mostly based on things that have been used to thwart attempts to recall problem politicians in the past.
So in number 10, you say opposition donations and spending are public, right?
Right, because that is actually a campaign to get someone elected, and we don't want a developer donating a bunch of money to get somebody in and nobody knowing about it. So, but getting somebody out, you know, you don't have that same corruption kind of issue.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this part.
Well, what we think on that, do we want to just do a little cleanup of some things before I forget to do them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so Steve, first on, since we've gone to elective officials, on line 3, let's change officers to officials.
Good.
And do the same thing on line 4. Two places.
So you're saying you don't see a difference, you just want it to be
consistent.
Yeah,
and in this way it also tracks the language of the initiative itself.
True.
So this one phrase where it says defining future eligibility for elected office, and that maybe should be elective office as the other similar change. For recall officials, I think, does it matter? To me, this little bit of language after and for the recall of officials who defeat a recall effort is sort of, it comes off as circular because it doesn't make it clear that they did that in the past, and that's what we're talking about, someone who's beat one in the past. So I'm inclined to say, and for recall for officials who have already defeated a recall effort? Because you have the future before. I don't know if it's, but it seems like something to make that a little clearer would be helpful, at least to me.
Right. Now, what about going back to the do or do not defeat? And that we're doing requirements or specifying, yeah, but it's not eligibility again. Yeah, if they do not. If they defeat it, it's not really their eligibility to office, it's their eligibility for future recall.
Right.
So, yeah.
Any comments?
No, I think that's fine.
Good with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
All right, so now we're just down to the last clause on how we're going to describe.
Yeah. So the way it reads in the initiative is to reduce retaliation and coercion. Donations and spending for a petition, campaign, and circulator payments shall never be identified, reported, or limited. I don't know, maybe it is a prohibition. Opposition donations and spending and all petitions shall be public. I mean, we could just say it like that. Spending for a petition or spending for a petition campaign, spending for a recall campaign. Shall not be identified. Well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, something. I think our staff draft might be quite a bit more accurate than we thought it was initially. Ask the proponent a question. I mean, if the people behind a recall campaign wanted to disclose this information, are they allowed to? Or are they actually not even allowed to?
No, it's not our intent to restrict them. It's to restrict the state from requiring it.
Not sure that's what it says very precisely, but I think you can interpret it that way.
I mean, do you think that lets people know that we're making the opposition report, but we're not making the proponents report in the staff draft? Because that's what's happening.
Right. And yeah. I'm not.
Is that a big enough issue that it needs to be in the title?
Well, I think people would be pretty surprised to know that they could do research on who was opposing a recall, but they could not do research on who was supporting a recall. I mean, I think we have to look much further than the Jefferson County School Board race.
Recent, yes.
See that? Those matters are of interest.
So it sort of feels like we've got two protective provisions here. We have subsection 3 of the initiative, which prohibits, you know, petition permits, licenses, badge bonds, all these things that I think can all sort of, and also certain government actions, which ultimately are sort of impediments to conducting a recall campaign of one kind or another. And then we have 10, which is also, in a sense, impediments or disincentives based on disclosure requirements, I mean, the ones that matter. Mm-hmm. So it almost seems to me like, and maybe it's overly broad, but what we're really prohibiting is kind of, you know, certain disincentives for recall proponents or whatever the term is used for the people who want a recall. And then we can just add a quick clause, you know, and requiring recall opponents' donation spending petitions to be public records.
Yeah.
And that would capture both, if somewhat vaguely, on the one, but there's a lot in there. I mean, there's too much in there to list it all, and it's one of those where it's not you know, they're all sort of going towards the same goal.
Right.
Which is, let's remove impediments or disincentives for conducting a recall campaign.
Yeah.
So what would your language be?
Something like, so after we defeat a recall effort, something like prohibiting certain
burdens, certain burdens or restrictions.
Burdens. I would almost say it's almost like it's disincentives or impediments.
Campaign finance reporting is not a burden or a disincentive.
Thank you.
I think I've said that many times.
It's a lot of work.
I will defer to the experts on the board in this area, but
I mean, I think what we're doing,
the catchphrase for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're doing is saying we are prohibiting reporting and contribution limits and reporting requirements for for a petition campaign.
I was pretty okay with the staff draft.
Really? But it doesn't say that it only applies to...
Your point's well taken. Yeah. I would defer to you on it. It's just, there's a lot in here.
Yeah.
And I actually thought it did a pretty good job of conveying what it did at a very...
Well, I mean, I'm...
...unconfusing way.
I'm fine with leaving it and then seeing, you know, if something happens on a rehearing.
Well, I think the one issue you've identified, this only applies to one side. I think we can simply add a little qualifier.
I don't think that's a bad addition, particularly if it bothers you.
Well, I guess we could just take, instead of and payments to recall petition circulators, we could say and requiring opposition donations and spending to be public records.
Right, or you could say requiring the opposition, you could lead with the requiring the opposition spending to be public records stuff, but prohibiting such requirements and requirements for the ID reporting
right.
from being applied to
okay.
proponents or something.
So
like
Stephen,
that.
Before and, then just say requiring opposition donations and spending to be public records.
Yeah, why not just
okay.
track it?
To be public records. And then, okay. And then prohibiting it, yeah. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Okay. Do you want me to read it? You want to?
Sure.
You have any thing to add to that?
I'm just wondering, does it seem confusing at all? I mean, it hit me that way, but maybe it doesn't. The very last couple words, payments to recall petition circulators. When I first read it, it was a payment to cause a recall of the petition circulators. But maybe it's just,
yeah.
Maybe recall petition needs a dash between it to make it one thing.
That's what they are there.
Okay.
Petition circuit. I mean, we could say payments to
persons who circulate recall petitions.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that's kind of weird.
Words, but
yeah.
solves your issue.
No, okay. You're okay with
I'm
it.
Fine.
Okay.
I'm
fine. Okay. All right.
I think there's two. Well, I think there's two types. Line 3, elective office, shouldn't it be offices? Plural.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think isn't that sort of like a, I think done that way it's still like
office.
A category.
Yeah.
And then is it public records or public record? Line 5.
I think that's a category to be.
No, that should be records.
Records?
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so now it reads, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning recall of elective officials, and in connection therewith specifying recall and successor election procedures for state and local elective officials, defining future eligibility for elective office for recalled officials and for recall of officials who have already defeated a recall effort, requiring opposition donations and spending to be public records, and prohibiting identification, reporting, or limiting donations to recall campaigns and payments to recall petition circulators. If you're okay with it.
I do think we need the of after limiting, because what does, you can even do a series. What the series really says, prohibiting identification of, reporting of, or limiting of donations to recall campaigns and payments to recall petition circulators. And I mean, you could either repeat the of, that might be excessive, but that's why the one is in there to begin with. Okay. Other than that, I think we're good.
Okay. You want to make a motion?
Sure. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 73 as we've amended the staff draft and as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. That concludes number 73, and that takes us to number 62, 2015-2016 number 62, Prohibition on use of hydraulic fracturing. Ms. Tierney.
Thank you. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, Bruce Mason and Karen Dyke, who are both here and have signed the affidavits of the designated representatives. I have prepared, in relation to some of the titles from the staff draft, a proposed red line that I thought might just help. I had hoped to get it to Stephen 24 hours in advance, but that didn't work. But I brought copies for everyone. So as we go through, you tell me how it would be easiest for you. Do you want me to hand them all to Stephen? Do you want me to do them as we get to each one?
We can just take the packet.
We can figure it out.
As long as it's in order, if you didn't shuffle it. That would be a problem.
Where they're all marked. So
they're
you
all
have
marked.
To figure out which footage is relevant.
They're marked, and they're only as to 64 through 72.
Oh, okay.
I think...
That's it?
You need one for each of you. I've got one, Elizabeth, if you want one.
We can make copies if we need more.
I have like six there. So.
Okay.
I'll put them right here.
They're all just 64, right? Or is there something else there?
No, they're all 64.
So I'm kind of...
So...
Oh, we don't have them for 62 or 63.
Right, just so I'm clear, there's...
Okay.
We're anticipating all the downstream ones, right?
Well, that's what I...
Okay, that's fine.
Do them...
These are extras.
Get rid of this administrative problem now.
In case anyone wants anyone.
Two extra copies up here for anybody that's interested, for all of these.
Oh, sorry.
I
So I do not have one for 62.
Okay. And did you already introduce your proponents on 62?
I did, okay. But would you like me to do it again?
No, I just wanted to make sure we were on there. All right. Then starting with number 62, do you want to just introduce your initiative and what you believe the single subject is?
Sure. So initiative 62 establishes a ban on the use of hydraulic fracturing in oil and gas development in Colorado.
All right. Anyone have any questions? Is there anyone who wishes to speak on number 62 with respect to single subject? All right, why don't you come on up, Mr. Kaufman?
I'm sorry, Dick. I didn't know you were speaking. I could have gotten you the headlines.
May it please the board. My name is Richard Kaufman, and I'm here today on behalf of the American Petroleum Institute and the Colorado Petroleum Council, which is the division of API here in Colorado. And on this single subject on 62, it's true that this is a prohibition, a ban on hydraulic fracturing. But I think if you look at Section 3, it has more than just that as a subject. It bans hydraulic fracturing on all Colorado lands, excluding tribal and federal lands. But the banning of that process on those lands is one subject. I would agree to that. However, if you look at Section 4, it goes on to terminate under the Colorado Constitution the property rights of those who would benefit from oil and gas exploration and production. You know, landowners who have leasing rights or royalty rights, or the companies that who would actually benefit from exploring and producing oil and gas. This ban is not dependent or related to property rights, and therefore the ban is one subject, and the termination of property rights is a separate subject. And so there are two unrelated subjects in this initiative. Following along on that, there's another subject that is unrelated to the ban on hydraulic fracturing. In Section 1, the proposed initiative states in part, such prohibition will not be repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Now, that is not in the title that I've read, the proposed title. And although this is somewhat, you know, vague, and the initiative attempts to establish a new relationship apparently between the various affected parties and the United States Constitution by declaring through state law that a ban does not violate the U.S. Constitution. The ban is unrelated to the U.S. Constitution, is not dependent upon it to be in this initiative. Therefore, those are two separate subjects. Now, admittedly, and I'm assuming here to a degree, because the initiative is not exact, I don't think it's precise on this point, it appears that this reference to the U.S. Constitution, I think, is related to a federal takings issue. And in essence, it's saying that this is not a federal takings, which is another issue. It is defining someone's constitutional rights under the federal constitution. And because it's vague, it also, and we can get to that later, I think under the provisions of 140.106.3c, it's rather vague. But I think those are the separate subjects that are in, and they're in this initiative, and that they're unrelated. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tierney, did you want to respond to that? Maybe you could refresh us. Last year, I think some of them included that takings language and
they did.
Yeah.
And they also, so let me start there. And the Supreme Court was very clear that that did not create a second subject.
Right.
That the impact on other constitutional provisions, whether it be the state constitution or the federal constitution, were not, did not create a second subject in, for purposes of titling, and were rather issues that went to the merits of the measures, not creating a second subject.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just because I went back to try and figure that out, but there's, I couldn't exactly match up all the different.
I think this one didn't come up last. This is new. This proposal is not similar to something.
Correct, although the last, the ones that had takings prohibitions
right.
were local control measures. They weren't bans.
Yeah.
But it was, you could, it was limiting oil and gas production and a no takings provision.
Right. My question is whether or not the Supreme Court, in when they took these, did it issue an opinion on the takings? Because I couldn't find on the taking issue whether or not it was a more than a two subjects or more. Because I couldn't find the opinion. All I could find was denying without an opinion.
So.
Upholding us without an opinion.
Right. What I can say is that it was an issue before the court.
Right.
And the briefs briefed that issue ad nauseum, and then the court determined
without an opinion. I just want to make sure they didn't issue an opinion on this specifically, because I couldn't find it last night. Do you agree with that, too? Is that everybody's understanding? They didn't speak specifically to this?
Yeah, I'm going to double-check that for you, but because they did, we did get opinion, we got at least an opinion, but I don't remember if there was full discussion of this issue. But I know the issue was before the court, and they affirmed that it was a single subject.
Okay, that's my understanding. If there is an opinion, if you can direct me to it, because I couldn't find it last night when I was trying to figure it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else on this? Or did we make you lose your train of thought?
Well, let me make sure I addressed both of Mr. Kaufman's points. So one was the
exclusion of federal land.
I think that the issue with excluding federal and Indian reservation land is because there's no jurisdiction over those lands in the state constitution, and it was just to make that clear.
Okay.
We don't think that creates a second subject.
So even if you hadn't put it in there, it would be true anyway?
Correct. Okay.
Any questions?
No.
All right.
Again, for the record, I think it's, and I think I'll incorporate this same statement later on for the other taking ones if it comes up. I don't know how you have a taking without something. So you have to have an action before you can have a taking. So I don't know how taking can be its own separate subject.
Right. It flows from
right.
the substance.
So that's why I think it is a single subject, I guess.
Yeah.
The taking is clearly related to whatever it is that's being taken. You couldn't have taking standing alone.
Right.
All right.
Got to take something.
We want a motion then?
Sure.
All right. I would move that we find that proposed initiative 2015-16 number 62, prohibition on use of hydraulic fracturing, has a single subject.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Let's go to the staff draft. So I know we don't have a red line, but do you have suggestions on staff draft?
We're fine with the staff draft.
Okay. And Mr. Kaufman, did you have any comments on the staff? Is he still here? Oh. I just didn't know if you had any comments on the staff draft.
One thing, and I think the board should consider, if you, unlike when we get to 63 in a minute, one thing that should be made clear, the way this is written right now, not just the title, but the initiative itself, if you're a plaintiff, you get attorney's fees and costs. It doesn't talk about prevailing plaintiffs, it just, you get them. and you get to recover your attorney's fees, whereas in 63 it says prevailing party. And I think that's a, I understand that could be a matter of interpretation too down the road if this actually became part of the Constitution. But I think if you look at 62, it's not clear.
I will comment on that a little bit. I think, I mean, that does look like an oversight. It's hard because one of the things we're not supposed to do is read into, you know, how a court's likely to interpret a proposed initiative or not. And on its face, it seems like either way we'd interpret this language, though we're sort of making a judgment about how a court would do it. I mean, I think a court would look and say, well, it would be absurd to allow a non-prevailing plaintiff or, you know, to recover those fees and would read that unwritten requirement into this initiative. That's interpretation. On the other hand, to assume that a court would not do that seems like it's also an interpretation. Given that, though, I don't know that this is so central that we need to reference it in the title, especially given the uncertainty.
Ms. Tierney, is the intent that that goes back to upon determination that a violation has occurred, the plaintiff shall be entitled, or is that to stand alone? In Section 5.
Yeah, is your question...
What's the intent of... what's your intent?
The intent is prevailing party.
Prevailing party, okay. All right. You know... In case the court finds it vague later. Go ahead.
No, I don't have any.
Oh, okay. How about the draft? You have anything?
I have a few minor suggestions. None of them I don't think are necessary, but they may make things a little bit clearer.
Sure.
Or not. And Steve sits down, I'll have him start putting those up. Yeah. First, just on line 3, after the semicolon, after ban, instead of specifying, I would just say stating, because we're not actually specifying a list, we're just making a statement. And before I go with more language, this is sort of a question for the board. The reference on the takings is the specific provisions of sections 14 and 15 of Article 2. One is public, taking for public use. The other is taking for private use. Do we want to make, you know, that distinction and specify it's a government taking, or do we think that's overkill?
I think I would defer to you if you thought it. Well, I'm fine with it, but I think I would defer. I don't think it's a confusing addition.
Okay. Steve, let's put this up and just see what we think when we see it. Where we say, so stating that the ban is not a, and then I think I would put government before taking. And then after private property, cross out and does not require, and substitute for public or private use that requires. And actually, I'd take out pursuant to Colorado's and just substitute under the Colorado. Pursuant seems a little more legal than we need. And then the next thing would be question for the board after the cycle after. Ban, and this is after to enforce the ban. I guess it's on line on the board now. It's on line 6. Do we think we need the and to seek damages, injunctive, or declaratory relief fees and costs, or is that sort of more than we need?
I think we need to say that, there's this private enforcement, but I don't think we need to say what it results in. So I think we could just strike.
I think you can strike it. I'm still stuck on your first point, that if it was the intent, since we're talking about money at this point, if it was the intent for it to be the prevailing party, that strikes me as a material fact, because it would be contrary to what the common understanding would be, I think.
When you say common understanding, of if you actually just read it, the text, the common understanding of the text.
It's, if the intent was to include prevailing, it would have been very helpful to include prevailing. Because you read it, I'm not sure that you would read it to include prevailing. The reason we would is because that's the common understanding.
Right.
And so then I flip on it to say, do you have to read the plain language? Do you have to read the plain language as omitting prevailing, and therefore clarify that you get costs regardless? I don't know what to do with it, because I can't change that. That's beyond a clear typo or anything like that. I think it changes the meaning to try and amend the provision and insert that, even though that's the intent. But I do find that to be something that should be clarified in the title, because it's contrary to the common understanding. Am I making sense? I'm stuck on that.
You're assuming.
I don't have a solution.
I don't think there's any solution except to just track the exact language and stick it in there, because you're assuming that the plain language reading is that a plaintiff in such action shall be entitled to recover. I think an average person could also read that to say the plaintiffs in such action, going back to such action, which is in the sentence before, upon determination that a violation occurred. And so
that's exactly would be the proponent's point, that a court interpreting that is going to relate that back.
Yeah. I'm not sure. We can't interpret it and put it on there. So all we could do is, if you think that's central, all we could do is just plug that exact language in, I think.
And the clause of including without limitation goes to suggest to me to not read into it prevailing.
But the including without limitation has to do with the relief.
The type of relief.
I just think even if we drop the exact language in, it wouldn't help anybody. We can't even agree on what it says. I don't know how somebody reading it would think that meant you can just, bring bad faith litigation and make money. I don't know that. Even if it were true, somebody would pick that up on that language.
I guess I feel strongly enough to at least suggest inclusion and see if you guys agree or not, including language. And I'm happy to key off what you said, which is
here's the difficulty is for me is that it's problematic either way, because it says what it says, but trying not to anticipate what a court would do, we still have our individual funds of knowledge, and I think that it's probably misleading to say in a title that anyone who sues is going to get their attorney fees just for suing, because it's probably, despite the plain language, I think that still takes an interpretive leap, just because
you know, the courts don't read things that to yield absurd results, and I think a court would find that to be an absurd result. So I think we kind of mislead by not including it or by including it in all likelihood. And I don't know if there's a solution to that.
Well, I think what we could do is say awarding attorney's fees in specified circumstances and then let the person go. I mean, that's commonly what we do when
we don't
understand.
If it's the intent of the proponent, which is what I understood her to say, that recovery, that you recover costs and fees as a prevailing party, but really upon the determination that there's a violation, and that tracks the language of the provision, the plain language, I'm not sure that I agree that I'm interpreting.
No,
I'm
simply connecting
the two concepts together, which is your intent.
I don't think it tracks the plain language. It's just very...
Well, let me suggest my language and you can vote it down.
Maybe we won't.
Because I my plain reading of it is that you get it regardless.
But that's an interpretation.
I don't think so. I mean, if I put your plain language into the title board, into
upon
the
determination that a violation of this article has occurred?
No, that you recover all reasonable costs and of litigation, including without limitation attorney's fees and costs. That's not an interpretation. Yet that would convey, I think, without the qualifier of upon determination that a violation occurred. Right. So I'm just connecting the two here, would be my suggestion, in order to actually defeat any interpretation, any misleading reading of it. I mean, if that's your intent,
I'm not following
what
you're suggesting.
Let me just suggest the language, and then you guys can comment on it. So I think it's after, in line 7, violation of the ban, semicolon, so right before the end. Actually, those are penalties.
Do it before authorizing me.
Yeah, exactly. To
why wouldn't we just leave that phrase that we took out in then?
Well, that's an idea too.
Mm-hmm. Fees and costs.
Yeah, but that's not the well, let me just suggest the language. To award reasonable costs of litigation, including attorney's fees and costs, upon a determination that a violation occurred.
I'm surprised by this because we have the upon determination that a violation has occurred going to the penalties. It doesn't qualify the plain language that you're concerned with. And then we have one of those, you know, statutory rules. Well, if you put it here, you could have put it there and you didn't. So
now you're reading it the way I read it originally, but it's contrary to the intent, which is what creates it to be misleading.
Okay. Right. Well,
so if that's the intent, then I'll stand by my language.
Okay.
You, by all means, if we need to tweak the language, I'm welcome. I'm open to those suggestions to clarifying what I'm trying to do, but I guess I'm going to stick by that and see what you guys think.
I think the problem is you're trying to kind of codify their intent in a question, and I'm not sure. I mean, what if a court did rule the other way? Then we would have written a misleading question.
Well, but
I mean, just because we put it in the question doesn't mean that they're stuck with it.
No, of course not.
In litigation.
But I think
it's the legislative.
Not including it is significant. And if we're going to include it, then I think it needs to be accurate. and it's only accurate if it's tracking the intent and the proper reading of it. So,
what do you think, Mr. Attorney?
I guess I'm fine with it. It costs and costs bug me, but I don't know what else, what other word you use, so.
Well, do we even have to, specify the attorney's fees specifically if we say all reasonable, toward all reasonable costs of litigation?
No, I'm okay with that too, if you want to just shorten it.
Yeah, well, then we don't have to do the fees and costs again and get that.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Anyone have anything else?
No, I do you want to vote on that? Because there seems to be some consternation about it, but.
I'm fine with it, so.
I'm fine with it also.
So we can just do it in the final.
Okay. Do you want to vote on it for the record?
She said she was fine with it.
No, she said no. Giving her the opportunity to second guess.
I'm okay.
I do think the two award, you know, doesn't track right. You know, because we have like, you know, excluding, stating,
awarding,
authorizing. Yes, thank you. Should have been able to figure that one out on my own. Okay. The only other thing was just to shorten language a little bit and not have it two clauses at the end. I think we could just say, authorizing a court or jury to assess penalties for a violation of the ban, cross out, and directing the penalties. And then just say, to be paid to the local government where the violation of the ban occurred. And from my perspective, I'm done.
I think that's fine.
Believe it or not.
You
have anything? No. You have anything? All right. Let me read it. As it reads now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a ban on the use of hydraulic fracturing in oil and gas development and in connection therewith, excluding federal land and Indian reservations from the ban, stating that the ban is not a government taking a private property for public or private use that requires the payment of a compensation under the Colorado Constitution, authorizing any person to sue to enforce the ban, awarding reasonable costs of litigation upon determination that a violation occurred, authorizing a court or jury to assess penalties for a violation of the ban to be paid to the local government where the violation of the ban occurred. Make a motion?
Yes. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 62, prohibition on use of hydraulic fracturing, as we have amended the staff draft and it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. And that one is adopted, which takes us to the next item on the agenda, which is 2015-2016 number 63, right to healthy environment.
Thank you, Martha Tierney, on behalf of the proponents. The designated representatives, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, are here, and they've executed their affidavits.
If you could just tell us a little about your initiative and what you believe the single subject is.
This is a measure to create a fundamental right of natural persons in Colorado to a healthy environment.
What was the title we approved a couple weeks ago that was the...
That was number 40.
And what is it? Do you remember the title?
Just one moment, I'll find it.
Okay.
Number 40 was local governance caption.
And did that create a fundamental right? And is that that one?
I believe so. Let's take a look at what we determined.
I guess where I'm going with this is just trying to make sure we don't set confusing titles.
Mm-hmm. So the title that the board set for number 40 at the rehearing is currently displayed.
Okay. We shouldn't have any issues with that, I don't think.
You don't think? Okay. All right. So if we just have that one in mind that we need to distinguish, I think, when we set these titles. Okay.
I think they're distinguishable.
Okay. All right.
This is a pre-existing right. It's clarifying something that's already existing. This is the creation of a new right in the current proponent's draft.
Okay. Correct. All right. Is there anyone here who wishes to speak on the issue of whether this is a single subject? Mr. Kaufman.
Members of the board, again, it's Richard Kaufman on behalf of the American Petroleum Institute and its Colorado division, the Colorado Petroleum Council. I believe, first of all, as a board member just stated, this creates a new right, a right to a healthy environment. And it says in the initiative itself, it says, including healthy air, water, land, and ecological systems, unquote. But the term including means some, but not necessarily all of what is contemplated by the amendment. Therefore, there are unspoken subjects which are not specifically covered by 63. The title does not comprehend those. Indeed, it would be impossible for the title to do so. It also sets up a new relationship to the Colorado Constitution for local governments in relation to Article 20 or Section 16 of Article 14, which I don't believe is in the title. And Section 32.2 of the initiative itself establishes this fundamental right, there's no relation to what other fundamental rights there are or the relationship to them. It also contains a subject. Pardon me, let me get to my notes here just a second. I think too, fundamental right is a catchphrase in this amendment. It's a way to try to get people to vote for it, and I don't think that should be included in the title itself. And there is no prioritization of this right as opposed to other rights that are within the Constitution of the state of Colorado. It also doesn't define a grieved person and what that means in relation to the enforcement of this amendment. And it permits, if there's reckless disregard, damages. There's no definition of that and what that means in the title. So I think there are numerous subjects in this proposed initiative 63 which are separate and not necessarily dependent on each other. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yes.
I don't.
Mr. Kaufman, you're familiar with the Supreme Court's decision last year. I believe it was in initiative number 89, where they found that public right to the environment is a single subject. I believe that was one that I personally voted against when it was here, but having said that, it seems like it would bind us. How would you distinguish that precedent?
I remember that that decision on 89 from last year. I'm not sure about this, but I think the point I was trying to make is in this one, it uses the word including, and it says healthy air, water, land, and ecological systems. Including is not necessarily a word that defines fully and completely what is covered by this fundamental right. And so I don't think the title can really reflect what may be covered by this. I understand your point on the Supreme Court opinion, but I'm not sure that initiative last time used the word including. I may be wrong. I don't have it in front of me. But
Ms. Tierney, do you know?
If we use the word including?
Yes. Do you know what changed from last year to this year? Or 2 years ago to this year? Okay. Yeah, I think Steve can pull it.
Thanks, Steve.
We got it, Martha. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, it does. The initiative itself, number 89, I'm reading from a copy of it. It says, people of the state of Colorado find and declare that Colorado's environment is the common property of all Coloradoans. Conservation of Colorado's environment, including its clean air, pure water, and natural and scenic values, is fundamental. And then, you know, goes on from there with other provisions.
No, thanks. Do you have any comments on based on what we did last year? Go ahead.
See, I think that confirms that including was in it last time as well. And it seems to me that the including language doesn't create a second subject. It just is an interpretive issue for after the measure were to pass, if the measure were to pass, what is included. But if the court found a single subject, and as we know, the court has looked at these similar measures a number of times and found single subject on most of them.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it seems the difference is that notion of common property. You don't have that in here. That was kind of confusing to us last time.
In 89.
Yeah, in 89, you had common property.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some changes, but I'm not sure.
I mean, I think if anything, this one seems a little bit narrower than the one we had last year was, in a sense. I mean, healthy is a slight qualifier, I suppose.
Right.
You need to jump in here.
Okay. Ready for a motion?
Sure, unless you have something else, Mr. Kaufman? No? Okay. Sure.
All right. I would move that we find that there is a single subject for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 63, right to healthy environment.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
That moves us to the text or the staff draft. Do you have any comments on the staff draft?
The proponents are okay with the staff draft as written.
Mr. Kaufman, do you have any comments on the staff draft? No comments? Okay.
Anyone else want to start?
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I had written up a fair amount, but if others don't have concerns, then I think the first thing I would just ask the board is whether we think that the requirement, the initiative of state and local governments to assign the highest priority is more sort of declaration or whether it's a central feature we need to talk about. That would be...
Well, I mean, I think it's a central feature. And, you know, it lets... I mean, when local governments prioritize their spending or zoning or... You know, environment is usually not at the... top. So maybe we need to say it.
Well, I think I'd ask Ms. Turney, what's the significance to you of that subsection 4 of the initiative? Do you think it's a central feature or something that people need to know about?
Well, it is intended to raise this issue to the top of the list, or toward the top of the list, let's put it that way. Because it's not saying it has to be the only highest priority. There could be other highest priorities, but there it is at the top of the list.
Because looking at subsection 6, for example, there's an action by a person's right of action for enforcement of the fundamental right to a healthy environment. And then it also says in 3 that protection of the right is hereby deemed to be a fundamental right also. Reading all that together, I guess what I would say is, can a person enforce subsection 4? If they don't think their local government's doing its job, can they sue their local government?
If the local government is assigning a higher priority to something else, is that what you're getting at?
Yes, like it's not they're saying they're suing local government for actually polluting or something, you know, affirmatively harming the environment, but they're saying local government, you're not doing enough to enforce our right to a healthy environment. We're going to file some sort of action to make you either get damages from you or make you enforce it.
Well, I don't know that it would be framed in the sense that you're not assigning it the highest priority. It would be framed in you're not doing enough, right? So
are you asking about 5? Or you're asking about 4? Is there a separate right of action in 4?
Right. Yeah, I'm saying, I mean, is there a cause of action for someone to sue the local government just saying, under subsection 4, you're supposed to assign the highest priority to protecting our healthy environment. We think that, I don't know, some big company is really polluting and you're not doing enough about it. You're not making it a high enough priority. We want damages from you, too. Is that something we think, A, could happen, and B, that if it can happen, that people should know about?
That they could get damages from the government for not assigning it the highest priority. Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Or maybe make them take action.
Well, I guess I think that that's the case, but I don't think it would ever be framed that way. Because in the scenario you raise, company A is polluting. They would sue for the government for the healthy environment, to enforce the healthy environment. It wouldn't be based on how high the priority of the right is.
Okay.
Right?
Well, maybe I'll put the question differently. Does anyone, either on the board or Ms. Turney or an opponent, anyone else in the room, have objection to basically listing, you know, saying something like requiring state and local governments to assign the highest priority to protecting a healthy environment as a clause in this title, or do we think it just adds a bunch of language that we don't need?
No objection.
Like, do you think you could sue a government for adopting a budget that spent a bunch of money on public safety and didn't spend anything on the environment because their highest priority is public safety?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then I guess you have to have some action happen.
I was going to say, I don't think it's controlling by who can sue who. It's one of the provisions in here.
Yeah, put it in.
As long as we hold to that and not get into who can sue who and who has standing and what a
such interesting question
would look like. It is an interesting question.
Do you think you can use tear gas anymore?
But I don't have any objection to putting it in. It's one of the provisions here, and clearly it's included for a reason, and it's set off in
So let's just use the language.
Subsection 4 for a reason. But I think you have to hold to the language of the provision rather than try and shape it that way.
Then I would just write after. And we can always say, if we really hate it or it gets too long, after the therewith, just putting it right up there since that's where it shows up, and just say requiring state and local governments to assign the highest priority to, it says that, I think we can say protecting a healthy environment. I don't know, we need to say the protection of.
Yeah, protecting is fine.
Moving on, just for some, this is just short cleanup. I don't think I'm gonna, but I would strike specifying that and just saying allowing. And strike may after governments and just say to. After. And after environment with a semicolon, I believe that's where it is, add on the word stating. Okay.
Do we have the same concern about the litany of the list, damages, punitive damages, injunctive? We don't feel strongly about that, but
yeah,
you took that out in the last one.
My thought would be possibly, give me 1 second. Okay. Saying that the sorry, I just have a hard time tracking it. I'm sorry, that's stating, Steve. It was after the prior semicolon, actually. Yeah. So my. Okay, and then right there. My thought would be to say, and allowing natural persons and governmental entities to sue to enforce. Strike the that. The fundamental right to a healthy environment, and then period, and then just strike the rest of the whole thing.
What about the use of the term fundamental? Does it really add anything? Like, I tend to think we could just do the right to a healthy environment.
Glad you brought it up, because I think it was pointed out as a catchphrase, but I couldn't find the case in time. 900 P second 104, and I don't have the case, I haven't read it, but I'll give you the synopsis here. So ballot title found insufficient. The title, quote, petition procedures fails to convey the fact that the initiative would create numerous, quote, fundamental rights retroactively to 1990 unrelated to procedural changes. If I'm reading that, it means that you fundamental right is was found to cause something because of its omission to be insufficient. I want to go read the case before
you
want
to keep fundamental in.
I think you need to keep fundamental, at least for this purposes. I mean, to the extent there's a petition for a rehearing, maybe the proponents and the objectors in that situation might address that case. But if I'm reading that very quickly and correctly, fundamental is there, or a lack of the use fundamental made a ballot title insufficient.
Yeah.
Or it could have been the.
You'd have to read it in context,
right,
I don't have that here.
I'm fine with that. Then let's leave it.
And I'll also say that I don't think it's a catchphrase You know, I think it's somewhat of a point of emphasis on the right, but we also, you know, they're locating this in the Constitution, in the Colorado Bill of Rights, which consists of fundamental rights. I don't think it's inaccurate. And I don't think it rises to the level of something that's going to necessarily bias a voter one way, you know, inordinately in favor of the initiative.
Okay. Anything else?
I think it's because it's on my brain. I'm stuck on the on the fees and costs awards. I don't know if I would have necessarily focused on it as much. You don't think that's necessary to include?
Maybe if you
that they recover if they're prevailing.
I mean, I think sort of listing every possible remedy they could get, like.
I'm with you there.
But if you want to keep some of it, then...
I kind of want to just be consistent with the, with 62.
Okay.
And in this context, we can use prevailing. So I think it's just... what did we use in 62, Stephen? It was just fees and costs and fees? Or litigation costs? Isn't that what we used?
Awarding reasonable costs of litigation.
Reasonable costs of litigation.
So I would...
Yeah, and that,
I would grab that language, incorporate it into 63, and add two prevailing parties.
I think it's better to use the determination that a violation occurred language because I think your average voter doesn't know what a prevailing party is.
There's our language from the last one.
Right. Okay. I just want to be consistent.
Okay.
So the language on the board right now tracks with the language that was set in 62 and awarding reasonable costs of litigation upon determination that a violation occurred.
Okay.
I'd note that the language in the initiative itself isn't
right.
Quite consistent.
Right.
I don't think it's...
Yeah, I don't think it's...
Misleading.
It's not a violation, right? Or maybe, I guess maybe it is.
I think it does use the word.
It does. In violation. 6, it uses violation.
Where's that? Oh, it does. Okay. The last line.
All right. You want me to read it? Or do you have other stuff?
No, that's it.
Okay. So it reads, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning natural persons' fundamental right to a healthy environment and in connection therewith, requiring state and local governments to assign the highest priority to protecting a healthy environment, allowing local governments to enact laws that are protective of a healthy environment, stating that such a local law governs over a state law that is less protective of a healthy environment, allowing natural persons and governmental entities to sue to enforce the fundamental right to a healthy environment and awarding reasonable costs of litigation upon determination that a violation has occurred.
I think we need has after violation. So.
Well, yeah, I read it in. Okay.
All good?
Yep. If you're...
All right, then.
Motion.
I would move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 63 concerning a right to a healthy environment as we have amended the staff draft and as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That passes unanimously, and that takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016 number 64.
Thank you, Martha Tierney. On behalf of the proponents, the designated representatives, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, are here. They've signed the affidavits of designated representatives.
And can you just start by telling us what you believe the single subject of this initiative is? And these are the one of the ones we got our handouts, right?
Right.
Go back and find me.
There's a, I circulated a red line of a proposed red line of the title. This initiative allows local governments to enact laws that limit, prohibit, or impose a moratorium on oil and gas development.
Before we get to the single subject issue, I actually want to ask you a couple, some questions about carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And I have concerns that we have before we even get to the single subject issue, a jurisdictional issue with changes made following the review and comment hearing.
Okay.
And this is actually going to apply to both this 164 and all the rest of them. So, and I'm going to first kind of lay out the legal requirements of our statute and the issue, because it's, I feel bad about it to some, bring it up to some extent, because it's a highly technical matter in a way. So section 140, 105, subsection 2, Colorado revised statute.
Sorry, what was it? Sorry.
140, 105, subsection 2. And this talks about after the review and comment hearing, but before submission to us, the title board. Says, if any substantial amendment is made to the petition other than an amendment in direct response to the comments of the directors of the Legislative Council and the Office of Legislative Legal Services, the amended petition must be resubmitted to the directors for comment in accordance with subsection 1 of this section prior to, and I'm going to paraphrase, submittal to the title board. What happened with these initiatives is on number 62, same proponents but different initiatives, and I assume you did these all on the same day.
We did.
I don't know that.
We did.
A question was raised. There was language in the proposed initiatives in 62 and then in 64 through 72 in the definition of oil and gas development, and maybe in the definition of oil and gas development facilities in a couple of them, about carbon dioxide wells. That question was raised in the review and comment for 62 and then wasn't raised in 64 through 72. Now, 65 through 72, anything that was raised in 65 got incorporated by reference to 72, but the 62 stuff didn't get incorporated by reference later. Subsequently, the proponents pulled out the carbon dioxide language from all of the initiatives in which it appeared. And why I find this a little bit unfortunate to bring up is it's probably in direct response what was said in the 62 hearing. But unfortunately, that hearing doesn't apply to 64 through 72 because it was, even with the same proponents, an unrelated initiative. So the statute gives us two requirements to not have to resubmit, or two things. One, it's either in direct response, and we don't have, I know we don't have that, at least technically we don't, even if as a practical matter we sort of do. And then secondly, you don't have to resubmit if the amendment is not substantial. And we don't have much case law on what substantial is. So I guess my first question is, do you think that the removal of this language is substantial?
I don't think the removal of this language is substantial in the context of the measure as a whole. And I think that, you know, there... what... I'm pulling up the red line. The definition of oil and gas development, including that language, we thought created a slight ambiguity that we didn't want in the measure. And so we removed it. But I'm very cognizant of that statutory site that you cited. So what I also did was resubmitted all the measures to review and comment and got waiver letters on all the measures. So the question for you is, they are identical to 64 through 72, and I have them here for you.
That was actually going to be my question to you, because I think that procedurally, at a minimum, we have a real issue here. You know, we don't have a lot of guidance on substantial. I know the cases where they found, the very limited ones, things aren't substantial. They're really insubstantial, like the change of the word other to the in one of them. And we've had some past experience, for example, with the situation of a substituted proponent to the two proponent requirement, where the court has been very strict of late on jurisdictional requirements, which this is. So my concern is if we set titles for these today, if they were to get challenged, you know, you'd have to go through that whole process. The court might eventually override us and turn them down. And we seem to have a pretty easy remedy in the sense that you've saw this issue and can come back to our next meeting with the identical new initiatives with new numbers that, you know, got the letter, which I know it's a purely technical issue for you. Part of me is sort of asking how you I think you run a significant risk if we were to set titles today of going through more process than you need to.
But isn't the fact that we got waiver letters on the identical measures evidence that they weren't substantial changes?
I think.
Otherwise, we would have had to go back to review and comment.
Yeah.
And I will leave that. And I think the answer to that is not necessarily.
I mean, and I think it depends on what the removal was. I mean, review and comment often doesn't get into the substance of, I mean, I think it depends on whether the removal of carbon dioxide is a scientifically significant removal. I mean, it's almost beyond my, you know, well, it's certainly beyond my skill set.
But isn't it the Office of Legislative Legal Services determination as to whether, like, somebody couldn't challenge them for waiving us, right? So that nobody could say you weren't eligible for the waiver because it was substantial, because we got the waiver.
Well, I understand your point. I mean, I understand as a practical matter why that seems like a strange situation. I'm concerned that the court won't see it that way. The difference is that what's happened here is you've had measures and there was certain language in them, and that language has since been changed and brought to us, you know, without an opportunity for counsel to even look at it and determine whether they thought it was important enough to bring up or not. And the theory is that someone could be surprised with that. Now, when you've submitted new ones, there's still that new layer of review, which we don't have here, even though they've now reviewed it and determined it to not be substantial. With these here, we don't have that opportunity. Like I said, I know it's a really annoying issue. I hate bringing it up, but I do think if we set on these, there's a substantial risk that, not to use that word yet again, that the court will, that if objected, the court will address the issue. I don't know if there's going to be objections at rehearing, but we may end up going through a rehearing, then having to go up to the court, everybody having to litigate it, and then we end up back at square one. You have the other ones you can bring back. It's just a suggestion. It's not, and I don't know how the other title board members will vote. You know, I probably am inclined to find that this change is substantial and technically not in direct response, even though as a practical matter it sort of is.
But so that I'm really confused then what I do. So I've already submitted, I've already gotten waiver letters, so they've said it's not substantial.
They're not the same initiatives. What you do is
they're different numbers, but they're identical.
Right. Then what you do is file those with us for the next meeting, and we don't have this issue clouding things at all, and we, presuming single subject and the rest, set titles. You end up in the same place just 2 weeks later.
I get that. I just think that spending 6 hours here today has been a waste of everybody's time then, and it's a real unfortunate situation because I don't see how an objection could survive, because you can't challenge a waiver of made by Office of Legislative Legal Services.
But there was no waiver made for these numbers.
But they're identical. They're resubmittals. We can prove they're identical.
If you want to challenge, if they get challenged, the court, I don't know, people may not challenge, it may not come up, it may all be fine. And they may, the two of them may vote, see it your way. We haven't heard from them yet.
Right.
But I'm just laying out the risks and where I think I have to stand on it, not where I want to stand on it.
Okay.
Just so that I'm clear, you don't have a waiver letter on 64. You have a waiver letter related to the other provisions that use the same language.
But so I submitted 64 again, and they gave it a new number because they have to give it a new number. So if you ever submit it again, they always give it a new number. You don't get to keep going with the same one. New number. And that I have a waiver on. It's identical. So they've decided that it wasn't a substantial change, but it's going to make us wait 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, that's assuming.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the concern is if you don't wait 2 weeks and we do set a title, then you're going to be waiting a lot longer and a lot more waste.
Right.
If, in fact, the issue that Mr. Gallander has identified
I'm fully planning to file them again on Friday. But if nobody were to challenge this, we wouldn't have to, I'd just withdraw them. But,
well, I mean, I guess the question is, do you want to go forward and have us rule on whether we have jurisdiction? Because then, you know, if he and I agree, then we're going to go to setting a title. And then it's really kind of your choice if you want to take the chance that somebody challenges you on that.
Right. We'll resubmit no matter what on Friday.
Right.
We'll see if there's a motion for rehearing on this basis. And then if there is, then we'll probably withdraw these because we're not going to go to the Supreme Court on that issue.
Will you, to be clear, if there's not a rehearing, would you withdraw these or would you withdraw the next set, right?
I'd withdraw if there's not a rehearing and nobody challenges
they'll
it.
They'll keep these and withdraw the next set.
Yeah. Do you want to make any kind of record on, you know, let's assume all of this stuff. Do you want to make any kind of record on whether or not this is a substantial change?
I don't believe it is a substantial change.
Okay.
Clearly, the Office of Legislative Legal Services agreed because they waived a review and comment.
But from a substantive standpoint, I mean, obviously you felt it was not a big deal to take it out. So was there something about that? Like, is it already part of the regulation? Is it, like, what made you decide it was fine to take it out? Did you decide it really didn't change the measure at all? I guess that's what I'm getting at. Do you want to make a record on that?
Well, I won't say that it didn't change the measure because it did change the measure, but I don't think it was a substantial change to the measure.
If I may, am I correct in that what this change does, so I went and did old research, so apparently CO2 wells actually are a thing, that it gets compressed into this sort of, I forget what the technical term was, but almost like a hybrid between a gas and a liquid down underneath, and then people actually extract it and then use it to re-inject into fairly tapped out wells elsewhere to force petroleum products out of the ground. So that's why it's a valuable product and there are actually wells for it. As I understand it, by taking this out, the substantive change is that now none of this regulation applies to those wells that are used to withdraw this semi-solidified or whatever, semi-liquid carbon dioxide from the ground. Is that an accurate understanding of what's actually happening here?
Yes.
Okay. So, my concern is, as a practical matter, you know, I think it is a substantial change in the sense that all these limitations no longer apply to something that before the change was made they applied to. Now, the fact that my office chose not to ask further questions of that, I mean, I think I understand your frustration with that possibly and why it may be persuasive evidence to a court. It's certainly not binding on the court. And, you know.
Right.
that's, I don't know what they do, and I don't know that taking the chance is necessary, although I suppose we could get clarity on the issue if we wanted to.
Does the waiver letter specifically address this?
No.
It doesn't, right? This is the generic.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's
can show you that what I submitted is identical.
Yeah, I don't.
And the letter.
No, I take your word for it. I just want to make sure that there's nothing specific
no,
in the waiver.
No, it's the standard
language
letter.
In the waiver letter that speaks to this, because it's not here at all.
Right. Maybe while you ponder that, I could have a minute and discuss it with my clients to see if they want to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, let's take a break and go off the record.
Sure.
If it pleases the board, I'm Elizabeth Titus, and I represent objectors Scott Prestige and Sean Martini. And I'm not going to offer my opinion whether this was a substantive change or not, but given, I'd like the board to consider maybe. This proposal that I think Ms. Tierney put forward, that we, if the board thinks it might have jurisdiction, to go ahead and move forward with the title, the consideration of title, and if there ends up being a challenge on this, then I think it's a pretty simple process to withdraw, resubmit, and then if there was a determination or not a determination on title, the measures are the same. I can attest to that. We've all been here a long time, and I'm just thinking to preserve all of our sanity a little bit, it might make sense to move forward.
Yeah, it's just, we can, yeah, okay. All right, we're gonna take a break.